At the age of 4, Liza Lister learned that she had leukemia, and so she deputized her parents, Philip and Elena, and her sister Molly, and more or less directed how the last 2 years of her life would unfold. What follows isn't an obituary. Liza told her parents that there should be no notices in the newspaper when she died. She said that dying is private.
She got diagnosed on October 31st, Halloween of 94.
We were going to go trick-or-treating. My beeper went off. The oncologist was calling to say that indeed Liza had leukemia.
We were admitted the next day to the hospital.
She knew that it was important. I think we probably told her that we expected to be in the hospital for a month. We explained that her white blood cells were sick. But what's a cell? What's a white cell? We did have our own version of a medical chart. That notebook became a repository, like we would write notes for the parent coming on duty. Elena wrote down, "I want to be outside." Liza saying, "I want to be outside and feel the wind and see the sun. I wish I didn't have such a big sickness, just a little cough for a day or two or something so I could go home."
The first inkling we had about her thoughts about her mortality was when she was about 4 and a half. She hadn't had an infection in 2 months, and, you know, we were sort of all beginning to, like, breathe again. And one night I put her to bed. She said, "Mommy, I've been thinking about dying. I don't want to be apart from you." And I said, "We will never leave you alone, and you are not going to die from this." And all the while in my mind, I'm thinking, I don't know that this is true, but I have every reason to believe it's true, and that's how come I can say it. I knew from knowing her that if I backed off from the topic, it would be doing her a tremendous disservice, and I was determined that anything she could face, I had to be able to face too.
"Daddy, could you please call me back at the hospital as soon as possible?
Thank you." Liza relapsed when she was about to turn 5.
The leukemia is back. She understood that they were going to give her high-dose radiation. She asked me, "Will I be able to touch you?" And I said, "You can certainly touch me, but you're going to have to touch me through a mask and the gowns and the gloves. You have to double glove." And she said, "Will I be able to lick you?" And I said, "No, no licking."
We were in the hospital. I think it was on a Friday that Liza and we learned that she was going to die.
That night, as we were getting ready for bed, I was sort of kneeling in front of her, and she lay her head on my shoulder and she said, "Mommy, am I always going to have my leukemia?" And I said, "We think so." And then she said, "Am I going to get to be a mommy?" And I said, "I don't think so." And she said, "Am I going to get to be a teenager?" And I said, "I don't think so." She said, "Am I going to get to be 7? And at this point, she's 5 3/4, and they said the widest margin was a year. And I said, "I don't think so." She said right away, "Mommy, I know how I want to die. I want to die on your lap. I want to have my lullaby tape on. I want you to die with me." "No, no, 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 no. I don't want you to die with me. I want you to die right after me so you can be with me when I die." And I said, "Part of me is going to die with you then, and a part of you is going to always stay alive with me." The doctors had a harder time being straightforward with her. So we told them, "Look, she's far more anxious." And they said, "That's because she's dying." "No, it's not because she's dying. It's because you won't talk about it with her."
We decided that what we would do would be make note of Liza's questions and collect them for our next meeting with this doctor. When it came to this meeting, I think the first question might have been, "How long do I have to live?" And the doctor said, "You know, nobody has a crystal ball." But she then sort of became her most commanding self.
She's looking him straight in the eye. "I want you to do everything you can to help me to live as long as I can."
"I know my hair may come out again. I want to try every medicine there is." Did you get that? Yes, Liza. I got it. And as the doctor was about to move on, Liza interrupted him and said, then could you say it back to me, please?
I remember thinking at the time, oh my God, she's just asked the doctor to repeat it back to her.
And then the last part of that meeting was when Liza asked if she could see one of the sick white blood cells. He went and got a slide so that Liza could perch herself up on her knees on a chair and look into the microscope and find a lymphoblast, which stains purple and blue, her favorite colors, which she looked at and said, you know, did it have to be those colors?
So we said, please just let us get home. One of the first things she asked is, well, can I go back to school now at least, when she found out that she was dying? And they said, no, you can't go back to school. She said, but I want to learn to read before I die. And so we got her a home teacher, and we have a videotape of her reading for the first time. And it was a Wizard of Oz newsletter. She became an honorary member of Oz.
Dear honorary citizen of Oz, I, the Emerald City of Oz.
She had a birthday party for her sixth birthday, and she called it a happy, sad birthday. She said, this is going to be my last birthday party.
That night, she seemed really spent.
And then I was giving her a bath, and she said to me, Mommy, I'm so tired. And I said, I don't want you to die, but I know you have to. It is okay for you to let go. And then about 10 days later was her sister's birthday, and I carried her out to Serendipity restaurant. She said, this may make me feel sicker, but I wouldn't miss this for anything. The next day, when we knew it was near the end, and that night we all stayed up all night together, and Liza, she said, I want to see Molly. And she asked the babysitter to come in from Brooklyn. She asked for her lullaby tape. She watched a few minutes of I Love Lucy, which was her favorite show, which she's very Lucy-like. And then I'm embracing her. She's standing, and I pick her up. And she looked up at the corner of the room, and my husband came over, and Molly was there, and my mother-in-law was there, and we were all kind of huddled around her. And she said, now ready. And that was, she lapsed into a coma. I knew right away that she was gone. I felt something leave me. It was really amazing. When we went to hear her autopsy results, the doctor said she lived on spit and vim, you know, for those last few weeks. I shouldn't even know how she made it. So she wanted to get to be six. She wanted to learn how to read, and she wanted to make it through Molly's birthday. And when that happened, she then let go.
You know, I wish I knew everything she said, you know, and I can't remember everything. I feel like, is there some number where we can dial up Liza and ask her, what were you thinking then? I don't know that number.
Liza Lister's story was produced by Emily Botine and originally broadcast on WNYC's The Next Big Thing. Philip Lister is writing a book about Liza. Its working title is A Short Good Life. That's how Liza described her time on Earth. Her story is also told in a new book by Steve Zeitlin and Ilana Harlow. It's called Giving a Voice to Sorrow, Personal Responses to Death and Mourning. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.